This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
All right. Let's do this.
Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, happy Patriots Day, America. It is hour number two. It is Wake Up Call on Sports Map Radio. The Boston Marathon being run today. There's an early baseball game as the Red Sox take on the Angels, wrapping up a four-game series. Shohei Ohtani will pitch for the Angels. A big day in Boston, of course, again with the marathon and the Red Sox. And also the NBA playoffs will be rolling through this week. The NHL Stanley Cup playoffs, well, they begin this week as well. The Boston Bruins are the number one overall seed, set an NHL record with 65 wins, 135 points. They have annihilated the competition. They're facing a Florida Panthers team in round one, though, that in four games this season, Florida's found a way to beat Boston twice. They split the four games. So, I don't think Boston will lose the series, but it might be a little bit more interesting. Two playoff games tonight in the NBA. Interesting games as well. Philadelphia taking on Brooklyn. And Golden State and Sacramento, that's probably the one that most people will have their eyes on. I think Philadelphia beating Brooklyn in game one on Saturday, and Philadelphia, I think, is in control of that series. But Golden State and Sacramento, we pegged it at the beginning of the playoffs. We said, look, there's a couple of these series that really have our attention. Phoenix and the Clippers was one of them. The Knicks and the Cavaliers, the other one, to an extent, that is a first-round series.
But is that one interesting just because, you know, the other ones we assume aren't going to be?
That's what I was saying, yeah. That's what I was saying. As far as a series in the Eastern Conference can be as entertaining, Knicks and Cavaliers are the one that is – all right, look, if you're just taking it first round to first round, that's one that's really intriguing, but it doesn't have any intrigue past anything that doesn't include Milwaukee or Boston, to be honest with you. And I know Milwaukee lost game one. I just don't think Giannis is going to be out this series unless there's something we don't know. I think that's the back injuries are weird. They're you never really know what his effectiveness is going to be, but they still have enough firepower to muscle their way through a Miami team that will not have Tyler Hero, who's got a broken hand. But Golden State and Sacramento with game two tonight, and it's another late start. If you're on the East Coast, that's going to be 10 o'clock that game is going to tip off. But Golden State trying to even up that series, getting back to the Chase Center. Their road woes continue, if you want to point that out. And I think Saturday night was one of those games again where I think the excellence in both coaches really came to fruition. I think Steve Kerr is going to have to figure out defensively how he wants to take on De'Aaron Fox the rest of the series. He's got Gary Payton Jr., who's fantastic defensively. He's got Wiggins. He's got a couple of other ways to get that series under control a bit. As De'Aaron Fox was held to a couple of points in the first half and then really took off in the second. Once the defensive lapses or the defensive substitutions for Golden State didn't work in their favor, they were able to take – De'Aaron Fox was able to take advantage of that and pour in, I think he had, 38 points in that game? What I've always loved about this is the ability of coaches to make the right adjustments. This is not a bench thing. This is not a substitution thing. This is mostly about what did we learn from tape that we can do better. Monty Williams, for example, in Phoenix, is going to go to tape to figure out how to be a better rebounding team against the Clippers. That Russell Westbrook can't be stealing all the rebounds that the Phoenix Suns are supposed to get to give the Clippers all the second chances that the Clippers were getting in that game yesterday. Russell Westbrook didn't shoot particularly well, but my God, was he great getting those boards. That to me, again, was he was sort of the unsung hero of that game yesterday. I mean, Westbrook finished with 9 points. He was 3 of 19 shooting. 3 of 19 shooting, including 1 of 6 on the three-point line. Where was he effective? Rebounding. He went in there and got offensive rebounds. He got 5 of them. That led the team, right? And he got 6 defensive rebounds. So he had 11 rebounds in the game. And some of those rebounds were key late in a very, very tight ball game. And the Clippers as a team had 49 rebounds and out-rebounded the Suns, who didn't get a lot of offensive rebounds themselves. They only had 6. So they were not getting any second chances in that game. Now, you're Monty Williams. That's the adjustment you need to make against the Clippers in game number two. And likewise, that situation for Golden State is, okay, what defensively can we do against De'Aaron Fox that we can hold on to for most of the game? So I got to tell you, that's the intriguing matchup. Now, some of these, again, we have eight series that are going on right now. Some of them don't really carry a lot of weight for me. I'm sorry. The Celtics cruised by the Hawks. The Hawks had trouble shooting. Boston has not lost in Atlanta all season. They probably will lose one of these games, but I don't think the Celtics are going to have too much trouble in this series. Again, Milwaukee and Miami got really interesting in the second quarter when Giannis is out. But again, you're talking about a team that's got Chris Middleton, Drew Holiday, Brooke Lopez. They've got Bobby Portis. There are ways for them to win that series against Miami, even if Jimmy Butler has a whale of a game, even if Bam Adebayo has a whale of a game, even if Tyler Hero can somehow play with a broken hand. No, Milwaukee's got enough firepower to win that series. But it's interesting because if Giannis is out, maybe Miami does steal this series. I just doubt it. Seven games is tough. I think with the x-rays negative and being watchful, he might not be effective in game two. I just doubt that he's going to be out of this series. But back injuries are weird, right? Somebody could have a back injury in game one, be back in game two. Some people have back injuries in game one. The x-rays are clear. Everything looks good. Oh, we're just going to monitor this guy and you never see him again, right? You don't see him the rest of the playoffs. Who knows? Backs are that weird. But there's just series right now that I'm just hugging. And Clippers and the Phoenix Suns, Golden State and Sacramento, the Memphis-Los Angeles Lakers series could get
really interesting
with Ja Morant's mm-hmm. hand injury. There's a lot of cool storylines coming out of the games.
Unfortunately, we'll never see Denver-Minnesota.
Yeah, I doubt it.
We'll never see it because, I guess they're going to show those games at midnight.
They'll all be late and they'll all be easy and Denver will just, God.
I mean, I did watch the first half. More than the first half. Actually, I think I went to bed when it was in the third quarter.
I went to bed in the second. In the third quarter is where really Denver took off.
They held Minnesota
14 points.
That's where I decided, I don't need to stay up for this. It was almost like Harlem Globetrotters versus Washington Generals.
Ah, nice. Yeah. Good.
It felt like they could do whatever they wanted.
Yeah. Denver was really in control of that game. And could some of this be fatigue on Minnesota? It's a trying week. I mean, you don't have a must win game on Tuesday night, but it puts you in a situation for Friday, right? And then you're playing a team on Friday that you find out on Wednesday that you're playing, so you're prepping for that game, and then it is a must-win situation. And then as soon as you're done with that, not only are you planning to play a playoff game, but you have to be on the road to do it. So you're not only getting word, okay, so it's Friday night, you win the game, now you know you're going to face Denver. You may have known you're going to face Denver because if you win, you did know that, but you're not prepping for Denver. You're prepping for the team that's playing on Wednesday. So you prepare for Oklahoma City, you roll Oklahoma City, no troubles, no problems, but now you're managing, how do we get workouts in to prepare for the Nuggets and travel there and get settled in for a Sunday night matchup? Could fatigue have stepped in? Yeah, I mean, they didn't shoot very well, and Denver did, but the reality of it is Denver's way better. I mean, Denver's just way better.
Yeah.
And that's just the way.
I mean, those teams, that's why... That's the one series, I think, in the West that isn't that entertaining.
Yeah.
I mean, on paper, yeah, Memphis should be better than the Lakers, but the Lakers have star talent that rise to the occasion. And
I think that was one of those series that you said, look, the Lakers are playing really good now, and if they get into the playoffs, if they get out of this play-in tournament and they are in a series with Memphis, they will give Memphis some fits. Their matchup situations that really do favor the Lakers. Austin Reeves, what's he doing? I'm him.
Yeah, I don't know.
Well done, Austin Reeves. Well done.
And how about Rui Hachimura?
Hachimura, he was great.
Didn't even know you.
Came in from Washington midseason. Been great. So these are some of the things that are. It's not just Davis and LeBron James that are working for the Lakers in this one, although they did, they were the team, 21 points, 22 points. But Reeves at 23.
Yeah. Hachimura had 30-something?
Yeah, he had 29.
29.
Yeah.
But here's the Here's the thing, right? This team, I feel the Lakers will be good if you have some of these secondary players stepping up, because if you leave it all on LeBron and Davis' the shoulders, they're going to end up fighting with each other.
Yeah, of course, right, yeah.
It never fails.
Well, I mean, I gotta tell you, I hate to admit this, but there's more storylines to these to this first round than I thought there was going to be. I mean, again, with the injuries to Giannis, Tyler Hero, Ja Morant, it adds a little bit more flavor. I knew the Golden State Sacramento game series would be interesting. I thought Golden State would win the series, but I didn't think Sacramento was going to curl up and die, and they won game one. But we were right on Boston, Atlanta, you know, Denver, Minnesota. They're just series that just don't carry weight. It just doesn't carry. Brooklyn, Philadelphia, I don't think is going to amount to anything. But some of these have got a, I mean, this Memphis Lakers series has got a storyline. I mean, the Clippers and the Phoenix Suns, the Giannis and the Bucks and Miami. That's taking a turn. So maybe we're getting six series out of this that have got some value to them. There's some entertainment value to them. So, you know, round two, you know, we'll, you know, it's a whole different ball game. But out of eight, if you can get six series that have got some real storylines and conversation to it. All right, coming up, the good, the bad, and the dumb. And then I want to get into comments that Dick Vitale made on social media over the weekend about the transfer portal. We'll continue. It's Wake Up Call on Sports Map Radio. Glad you could be with us.
Wake Up Call continues now on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Time for the good.
That's really nice.
The bad.
That's the bad guy.
And the dumb.
What an idiot. Oh, what a loser.
All right, good, the bad, and the dumb. Your Monday edition, as we had a nice weekend of sports action. But was it good? Was it bad? Was it dumb? Let's find out. Good of the day.
Well, the good of the day, we got to go all the way back to Friday.
Friday, okay.
Yes. Because I've never heard of this kid, but you might have heard of him. Maybe you haven't. John Rhys Plumlee.
John Rhys Plumlee, I've heard of, but is he Mason Plumlee's brother?
No, unfortunately, he is not related to any of the Duke Plumlee brothers. Mason, Mitchell, and Mark.
So he's not Plumlee basketball royalty?
No, he is not Plumlee, right. Plumlee basketball royalty, but he is establishing his own royalty at University of Central Florida.
Okay.
Because on Friday, he played in UCF's baseball game because he's their, I think he's their center fielder.
That's right.
And he did all right. He went 2-for-3 with a triple and two RBIs.
No, that's not all right. That's really good.
Yeah, en route to UCF winning 12-3. He then left that game in the seventh inning, jumped on a golf cart to attend UCF's spring game, of which he is a quarterback, and he only threw for 236 yards and two touchdowns.
That's awesome. That's awesome. But I've seen Jameis Winston played both sports. There's a couple that played both sports. But how many of them had to do it in the same day? How many of those guys who have played dual sports have had to do one and the other in the same game?
We're just highlighting John Rhys Plumlee because, you know, first of all, he's a Plumlee.
Why not? Yeah, but he's not of the royalty. So.
Yeah, I'm going to say he's Plumlee removed.
Right.
Come on. That name's not like Smith.
That's right. If They've you're got a Plumlee, there's a chance in the DNA tree you've got to be related somehow.
Somehow.
Yeah.
There's a way. But yeah, no, I thought this was really cool. I mean, the fact that he took a golf cart, I mean, you know, there's video of him following him. There was a video photographer running with him as well to mark the occasion. And he's running down, like, you know, through the stadium. There were little kids who were running after him.
Yeah, I thought was really UCF cool. UCF hyped that up.
Oh yeah.
When the marketing department went, "Oh, look at this. This is kind of cool. Look at this. He'll do this and this. Let's make it so, like, we'll make a big deal out of it on social media."
And if they didn't, UCF, give Tony and I a call. We'll help you market this type of stuff because that's what we do.
We like that kind of stuff. So congratulations. Is he going to win the starting job? Is he the new starting quarterback?
I don't know.
We'll see.
But the
spring games are fun. People love spring football games, man. They love them. Here in the South, It's like a holiday. They love going to the stadium and watching teams practice against each other. They think, you know, like, who's going to be the quarterback? They got Joe Milton and Nico Imolave, who is the quarterback of Tennessee. They're both duking it out in Knoxville. People couldn't wait to see what those look like on a Saturday spring game. So good for him. That's pretty awesome. All right, what's the bad of the day?
The bad of the day is, all right, let me say it this way. We are loving the pitch clock, right?
I like the fact that baseball games are faster. So I can see why people don't, but I do, yes.
On Friday, we might have found a flaw in the pitch clock.
Okay, which is?
Cody Bellinger, Cubs outfielder Cody Bellinger, weird to say, returned to Dodger Stadium. When he got to his at-bat, the crowd obviously gave him a huge standing ovation. And he stepped out of the batter's box, tipped his hat to the crowd, stepped back into the batter's box where he earned a pitch clock violation.
Right. Right.
So I think, I don't, is it a strict, hard, stringent rule on that time, or can an umpire recognize the moment and go, okay, yeah, you know, he was a longtime Dodger. He has been here for years and.
Okay. I've got a thought on this.
Yes. I would love to hear it.
Okay. I see, it seems like common sense would say if the crowd is rising to the occasion to give a player an ovation, then you have to at least honor the ovation and the moment and pause. The problem with it is that you're then giving the crowd the authority on how the pitch clock is dictated.
Okay.
So what if the home crowd wanted to give a standing ovation to a home player who just hit a grand slam in his previous at-bat to slow the game down a bit to the advantage of the player? Would the umpire have to evaluate that situation and go, well, they're on their feet again. What can I do? I can't have the pitch clock if they're on their feet. Crowds will get into that moment and
right.
go, look, we're being able to dictate the game. Every time we want the game to slow down, we just stand on our feet. Now, people may say, oh, but Cody Bellinger was returning. Where's the line drawn? Like, would you pause for every standing ovation? Or would you have to say, look, just to prevent the slippery slope, let's not do any standing ovation. Now, I do agree that was the wrong use of the pitch clock violation at that particular moment.
See, I mean, umpires are fans of the game. They have to be. That's why they're there. Right?
I would not go as far as to say they're like us.
No. I'm not going to say
that
at all.
There's a business that they have to do that we don't have to.
And aren't they? Do they? Are they union?
The reason,
NFL referees are not union.
The reason I say that, and I really want to differentiate, is that you and I could marvel at a blast to outfield and wonder if it's a home run. An umpire has to watch to see if the guy is on base tagging up correctly.
Right.
He can't be a fan like us. Look at that shot. He's got to go, are you on first? You on first? Tag.
I'm saying, Tony, is as far as being a fan of the game, is understanding some important situations.
Like, sure, they give baseballs. Like, they'll give a baseball to a guy. Like, here's your first hit. Here you go, man.
Here's the first hit. You know, if a guy breaks a record, I mean, you know, will that disrupt the flow of the game? You know, if like it's Ricky Henderson stealing second base where he captured the all-time record and he takes the bag out, is that going to disrupt the flow and is that going to cause a pitch clock violation?
Right. So I think there has to be is a conversation, because here's the thing. I can't fault the umpire for not pausing in that moment if Major League Baseball never told him he had the authority to do that.
I can get behind that.
Right? Like, if Major League Baseball never gave the umpires permission to go, you actually can control this. Like, if you notice a certain scenario that the pitch clock should be paused and delayed, you have the authority to do that. Now, maybe they do, and he didn't enact that. But I haven't seen anything in writing that says that this umpire had the ability to pause it for that moment.
That he can have a certain, allow a certain moment, you know, just.
Right. Otherwise, he has an authority on the field to protect the rule, the current rule of the game, because by pausing the pitch clock to allow Cody Bellinger to enjoy a moment, it benefits somebody, and it doesn't benefit another somebody else, right?
Mm-hmm.
So he has an authority on the field to make sure that whatever rules in play, he's enacting, even if the secondary moment should cause delay. Now, at that moment, both the Dodgers and the Cubs might have been okay with that moment, but he doesn't know at that particular
And Cody,
he's not getting feedback from Dave Roberts and Dave Ross.
And Cody didn't complain about it when he was issued a strike. He wasn't fazed by it. He still took the at-bat. I mean, it was just like, yeah, whatever. You know, but I mean, the only problem is Cody always looks like that.
So I think the Major League Baseball should be telling these umpires in certain situations.
Like maybe give it a 5 second.
There's a level of common sense that we should be in the process of.
Right.
Let's not abuse it for everything. And if you start noticing that home crowds are taking advantage of this, giving standing ovations to every single person that comes to the plate, don't hesitate to go, no, I don't care. I don't care. Play. Like, we're not going to play this game where the crowd is going to start dictating special moments and we're pausing the game and then we're just back to square one again. No. That particular moment, we get it. We get it. But there are other moments that we're not going to just do it just because. We want to slow down the game because it benefits a batter. So, like, if a batter complains, like, man, I'm having trouble adjusting to the pitch clock, and the crowd goes, yeah, don't worry, we'll help you. Every time you come up, we'll give you a standing ovation, and they'll pause the game for you. Right. So, yeah, this is really a good discussion. We'll have to do the dumb in the next segment.
Yeah.
I think this is the test case now for, good to bring this up, because this is now the test case for Major League Baseball to go, you know what? We never thought about that.
No, why would you think
about that? So we now saw it. We're not comfortable with the way that played out. And so let's make adjustments.
Make a little addendum to it.
Because it was weird. It's weird to, you want to take a moment to honor, like players do it all the time, right?
Yeah.
I mean, there's always
player returns
and the fans want to say thank you.
Exactly. And I think that's part of, part of the issue. Is, I mean, he just, quick little tip of his hat to the crowd and then, get back to business. And that's, yeah. I mean, he's there to do a job, but.
That's a good point. Yeah.
Who had a lot of success with his former club.
We've seen other sports go, yeah, you know what? In this situation, we gotta make an adjustment. Maybe they'll make an adjustment. All right, we'll continue with the dumb next. So we continue with Wake Up Call on Sports Map Radio.
This is Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, we're continuing the good, the bad, and the dumb. So let's get to the dumb of the day here on your Monday edition of the good, the bad, and the dumb.
Well, I chose this song specifically for the dumb of the day.
Oh, I like that.
This song is by a band called Snow Patrol, and it's called Chocolate.
Chocolate, okay.
And what the dumb of the day is, I don't know if you've remembered this old social experiment where somebody would try to give a dollar away. It's also a sales tactic. Where you try to give a dollar away, but you can't do it because people are always going to be skeptical. Like, what's the dollar for? Why? You're just trying to give free money away, just a dollar, people.
And people
are hesitant about receiving that dollar. Something similar is happening up in Canada, where a Canadian woman has just one month, Tony, to give away nearly 130,000 vintage chocolate bars before they expire.
Vintage chocolate bars.
Yes.
What makes them vintage? Just the chocolate?
I guess what the brand of it,
it's a high-end brand?
Well, it's a chocolate called Run and Butter. I've never heard it. Run and Butter bars. She owns a chocolate shop, and prior to COVID or just around COVID, she had ordered a bunch of cases of it. But due to COVID, there were a lot of delays. So then she got a gigantic shipment all at once.
Uh-oh, but the expiration date is coming.
And the expiration date is coming at the end of June. And the problem was that, people would go to her store and buy boxes or go online and just buy a box of them. And that's what she was counting on. But once she had this huge surplus, they began to realize, oh, she always has them. I don't need to buy a whole box right now. I could just buy one.
Oh.
So she's left with all these chocolate bars. Now she's doing everything she can. She reached out to the Edmonton Oilers to say, hey, can you do you guys want to have a free candy giveaway? I have all these chocolate. Edmonton Oilers said, no, we have our own snack supplier. We can't break that commitment.
Oh, yeah, that's tough. That's too bad.
So, well,
maybe this publicity will get people to maybe sort of help her out with this chocolate.
I hope so. I mean, she's giving it away to she's been donating mass amounts of bars to food banks. To shelters across Canada.
Is she looking to make money, or is she like, I just want to get
rid of them? I think at this point now, she's like, I just want to get rid of them because, I mean, I don't know if she can ever get her original investment back, or maybe she already has, but it's just the fact that she's just going to end up throwing them away anyways.
Yeah, right, right. So just make sure they get into the people's hands. Like, hey, come into the store, buy one chocolate bar, get 10 free.
Exactly.
I don't know, something like that.
But it's just funny because there's so many people out there like, oh, no, we don't want chocolate. We don't want chocolate. That's why I brought up the dollar thing. It's like,
oh,
so many, you know, there are people out there like, oh, no, we're good. We're good. And she's like, yeah, I can't give it away.
If you gave me 20 chocolate bars, I mean, I like chocolate bars, but if I had to eat them in a month, I'd be like, I don't know.
Yeah, exactly.
Chocolate bars if I have to eat them in a month.
I mean, and that's the hard part, right? It's like, you know, if somebody gives you a bunch of chocolate bars, you know, say they give, it's like, I got 100 chocolate bars. Here you go. You're like, oh, great. And then you're going to end up throwing them away.
Right, right.
Because there's no ways. I mean, you know, you should. I'm not saying there's no way you can go through 100 chocolate bars, but you shouldn't.
She has
about 130,000.
Oh, God. Forget it. She's never going to get rid of those. Those are done. Like, even if she said, I could, at the Edmonton Oilers, can I give away? And the Edmonton Oilers went, yeah, okay. Well, they're getting, what, 20,000 a game? Like,
yeah.
And they got the playoffs, but you'd have to give 10 each. Or to 5 each.
It's such a weird problem to have.
Oh, goodness gracious.
You know, I mean, and she's reached out. I mean, you know, and if you go to her Facebook page, you know, she will tell you, like, I donated X amount of bars to this church. You know, show them some of your support. I mean, she's doing, you know, this food bank, show them some of your support. So she's advertising for them on her own, through her own social media. But, yeah, I'm thinking she's going to be left over with a lot of chocolate bars that, I don't know, maybe you just have a community party.
So I want to know, I never seem to have this problem when I have candy in my house.
Exactly.
What happens to chocolate when it's expired?
I don't know.
Like, does it turn green? does it turn chalky? Like, what does it do? Like, you know, you got meat and you're like, oh, that's bad. Ugh, it's got an awful smell. Bread gets stale and turns moldy. But what does chocolate do when you go... Here's the thing with my wife. My wife thinks the expiration date is like a ticking time bomb.
I'm the same way.
Where she says, like, this is good today. As soon as the sun comes up tomorrow, this is poison. And I'm always like, yeah, you know, that's a sell by date, right? Like, they have to sell it. But like, nope, gone.
Like, one of the comments here just kind of describes, it says, when it comes to chocolate, as long as it hasn't bloomed. Now, I'm not a fan of that word when it comes to chocolate.
Yeah, that means, like, I don't want something to grow out of it.
But it says, when the fats separate out and dry, it looks like a lighter colored crust on the chocolate.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
It is still good to eat. I have seen that. I remember buying a Hershey bar once, and one of my kids bit into it, and he's like, what's wrong with this chocolate? I was like, I don't know. I just bought it at the store today, and it was a grayish color.
Yeah, yeah, that's right. I've seen those.
And
yeah.
He didn't like it.
Okay.
And I was like, I don't, that's fine. You know, that's not going to hurt my feelings. But I guess maybe that's what they're talking about. Like, that's an expired chocolate. It's still good to eat. It's still safe to eat. Maybe just, I guess, doesn't have the same quality taste. I don't know.
She can't get rid of it, man. She bought this in 2020, she said? That came in?
Yeah. She had ordered them.
Right.
And then there were delays.
Delays. So she's getting the 2020 chocolate.
Right.
She didn't get new chocolate.
Or she ordered it during in 2021. I mean, I don't know when the exact time frame when she ordered it, but the problem was that there was a lot of shipping delays when she ordered it. And, you know, it was like one of those, like, well, you know, I order X amount of chocolate a month, X amount, you know, from this, like standing orders. And then for whatever reason, this one product all came at once.
It's what's sad is that you don't want her to spend more money shipping this stuff for free, right? Like, you don't want her to go, God, I bought it, and then I spent thousands of dollars shipping this stuff for free.
And that's the problem, right? I mean, yeah, I'm assuming she's in the Edmonton area because she reached out to the Edmonton Oilers. But what if, like, the Toronto Maple Leafs said, yeah, we'll take them, just ship them here.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, that's going to cost her how much?
Yeah, I don't know.
I mean, she's probably already going to lose money on it. You don't want to throw down any more on top of it.
Well, my sympathies are to her. I think she's going to end up throwing away a lot.
Yeah.
A lot.
But you know what I would do? I mean, you know, obviously you've given it away all in your area. Just have a bonfire. Make that town smell great.
Yeah, that's true. Very true. Good point.
You know, make sure you're down, you know, the town is downwind and say, hey, guys, we're just going to have one big chocolate blowout.
COVID, man. Now it's affecting the chocolate.
Now it's affecting the chocolate.
It's crazy. That's crazy. Man, oh, man. I don't know if I've always wondered about these, like, candy stores. Like, they get.
How,
like,
do they stay? I understand the ones. Yeah. I'm with you. I understand the ones that are in, like, touristy areas.
Right, right.
You know, I get that. There's one that's in a small little town right down the road from us. I don't know what they do, how they're able to stay open. How they're, I mean,
yeah,
they
we had just, one.
They gotta have low overhead or something.
When I was in New Jersey, we had there was a small town, Clinton, New Jersey. It was a really nice little town, and it had a downtown, right? Like, there's a cheese shop, and there's a coffee shop, and there's, like, an ice cream place, and it was really nice. You'd walk up and down, and you'd see these little stores, and they had a candy store. The candy store was amazing. You'd walk in there, and there would be all the candy that you would normally get in America. Then there was a section of imports. So if you wanted English chocolate,
yep.
Dutch chocolate, whatever, chocolate bars from Europe, they had a section where you could find this stuff that they would bring in. They'd have the Jelly Belly section. If you wanted the million different kinds of Jelly Bellies that existed, that was over there. They had saltwater taffy, you know, everything, right?
Right.
And I kept thinking to myself, so we went in there with the kids. Everybody gets some candy. We get to the counter. It's like $11, right? And we got a bunch of candy. And I'm thinking to myself, how in the world are you affording this building in New Jersey on people just coming and spending $10?
$10, $11.
Pop? Like, how much candy can you get for $20?
That's what I'm saying. I mean, if it's in a touristy area,
right,
that makes all the sense in the world to me. Like, if it's one of those that's, like, you know, where it's all the stores right there are, like, they're all tourist attractions type of places, you know, like the stores that sell tchotchke type stuff. And it's like, okay, that makes sense to me that you would have a candy store on that street because that's what you do when you're on vacation.
Right.
We're talking about the one that's in your local strip mall.
Yeah.
That you're sitting there and you're like, okay, how are you,
like,
doing it?
Sugar Express.
Right.
Or something like
that. And I'm not talking about that. There's one that's always in a mall now, like Pop Sugar or It's Sugar. I'm not talking about them because they have stores in all the malls across the country. Obviously, they're making money. It's that one store that you just sit there like, how are you? There's no reason. There's nobody comes here.
Yeah. Like, if you wanted to go in and get some, like, Willy Wonka dinosaur eggs, like, that's cool. Like, oh, look, I remember that candy when I was a kid, or, like, bottle caps.
But it's like, it's the one next door to the nail salon. That's the type of store we're talking about.
Exactly. Exactly. So I don't know. I think it would be a stressful existence to try to make your overhead selling candy one
selling
bar.
Gummy bears.
Selling gummy bears. Exactly. All right. Coming up next, Dick Vitale had an online rant this weekend about the state of college basketball and why he's dead wrong. We'll have that for you. Coming up next, Wake Up Call continues.
Wake Up Call with Tony D and Ron Culver continues now on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Tony D and Ron Culver.
All right, thanks for joining us. We continue. It's Wake Up Call. All right, so over the weekend, I saw on Twitter Dick Vitale, who was recording by, I think, his swimming pool or some nice swimming pool. I'm assuming it's his, about the state of college basketball. As you know, the transfer portal has been very much in effect. You have players like Hunter Dickinson, for example, leaving Michigan. You got other players that have gone, you know, transferred in and out of school. Syracuse losing a few players. So it's just been common practice these days. And I've said this about Dick Vitale for a long time. I mean, he's been an important college basketball broadcaster since the 80s. So it's been a long time that his voice is really prevalent in the sport that he loves. And I've always said, if your job is to make me love your sport better, I respect that. If you just come at it with passion, I can respect it. I may not love the sport as much as you, or I may not like the sport as much as you, but I certainly can respect your passion. I love college basketball, so Dick Vitale is kind of an important person. But here's what he said about the transfer portal.
Hi, everybody. Dick Vitale. Let me share this with you right now. I mean, there's an epidemic going on, and I think the NCAA's got to act and act quickly. It's insanity. It's wacky what's going on. The transfer portal, I keep harping on this because it's absolutely destroying so many teams, especially the mid-majors. The mid-majors, just check where these players, star players, it's everything's legal. It's all within the rules, but the bottom line, it's not good for the game. It's creating such instability. It's unbelievable. The 1,100 players are in the portal. Come on, NCAA, don't sleep on the deal. You got to check out what's going on. We got all these mid-major stars. They leave immediately, and I don't blame them. They want to go play for the elite schools, and the elite schools not doing anything illegal. They want them. But the transfer portal has really caused a nightmare. It's an absolute mess, and it's time for the NCAA to act and to do something about it because it's rooting the stability of the game.
Nothing he said in that statement is correct. Nothing. This is just an older person wishing it was like the good old days. Now, here's the thing. He can have an opinion that he doesn't like it, but nothing what he said is correct. One, is it an epidemic? It depends on how you use the term epidemic. Two, is it ruining the game? San Diego State just played for the national championship. They're from the Mountain West Conference. Florida Atlantic at a Conference USA was in the Final Four. This came after we had a Final Four that included four teams with a deep history of winning national championships in college basketball in North Carolina, Duke, Kansas, and Villanova. UConn just won another national championship. San Diego State benefited from an arrival of a guy like Matt Bradley into their program to help them get to a point where they played for a national championship. But at the root of it all, and this is why, I mean, again, I respect Dick Vitale. I do. But did you hear at the end of that? He was almost in tears. What is he worried about with the sport? Let's be honest about college basketball for a second. Let's be honest about it. What's its selling point outside of what you love with your team? What's its selling point as a sport in its entirety? Not rooting for Tennessee or Villanova or Kansas or Wichita State or USC or whatever it is. Outside of your individual passion for the school you root for, whether you went there or not, what is the overall appeal in the large part of college basketball? It's tournament. That's its appeal. It's tournament. Does anybody worry about the quality of the tournament? No, because the selling point of the tournament is never about getting the elite through into a position where blue blood programs play blue blood programs or what he's complaining about, mid-majors. The tournament is go get it. And that's how it's consumed. Everybody looks on it and goes, great, let's have the chaos in the beginning. Let's watch it towards the end for the basketball. And sometimes you get national championship games that are played well, and sometimes you don't get them played well. The overriding problem with his rant is that he doesn't have a solution for it. Listen to the way he kind of goes off at the beginning, and then at one point he goes, I don't blame them. I don't blame the schools. They're not doing anything wrong. He's looking at the NCAA. You got to fix it. Fix what? The transfer portal?
And The other issue that I have, I mean, I know he's concentrating solely on basketball, but the transfer portal works for all this works.
It works for everything. Again,
if we didn't have the transfer portal, we wouldn't have Joe Burrow.
That's exactly right. Here's his overriding premise of why this is bad is not bad for the kids that are doing it. That's the problem. Look. What he's saying is, you kids, you should stay committed to your school, even if promises are broken, even if the coach leaves for a better, higher-paying job, and you don't like the coach that's coming in, you should stay because I like it when you do. That's basically that rant. That is, I hate to say this because I love Dick Vitale, but that is old guy get off my lawn ranting. That is, it was better in my day. It stinks now because it's new. That's all that is. Ask any kid in college basketball, college athletics, football, gymnastics, track and field. Would you like to sit out a year of eligibility for transferring schools? And what would they all say? No, it's actually against the nature of this whole concept. Why is it that a kid who's studying to be an engineer can transfer right to another school and still get out in 4 years and get into the workforce? But I have to sit out a year of my eligibility because of a rule that nobody knows why it was there in the first place? I'm not allowed to change schools without penalty, but everybody else can change schools and nobody has a penalty? You can go from school A to school B in any other field of academics and not suffer the consequences, but I'm supposed to suffer something for changing schools when my school let me down with promises they didn't keep, coaches that are no longer here. The main reason that I come here is because a coach sat in my living room and told my mom that I would be playing and I'd be taken care of, and then I get here and I realize he doesn't even know my name. And I have 4 years to play my sport, but now you're telling me I have to give up one of those years if I want to transfer to another school that may be closer to home, that may be better for me, and give me playing time, because in the end, that's what I want to do. I may not be going pro in the sport of my choice. And I got an old guy screaming by his pool that I shouldn't be allowed to do that? Like, I'm sorry that the world is turned upside down with NIL and transfer portal, but everything that is good for the student is not bad for the old man fan. Right? Is anybody losing interest in the sport because of the transfer portal? Here's the problem. You may have problems with kids that you root for. It goes back to what I used to say all the time. When people used to say, these kids leaving, they should be made to stay in school and get their degree. You only care about their basketball ability or their football ability. It's mostly basketball because it's one and done. Nobody really cares if a junior leaves for the NFL. That's usually... But you care about State U and the basketball program. You don't care about that kid's education. You don't care that he gets a degree. You care that he averages 28 points a game and you make another run at the tournament. It's this phony nonsense of caring about student athletes or caring about the game. The game's not suffering. The game's not in turmoil. The game has one of the quirkiest, funnest, most interesting playoff in all of sports. And as long as they have that, they'll always draw the eyeballs. And fans will always root for their school, come hell or high water. That's just the way it is. And coaches have to learn to adapt. You have to go get the players, and if you lose players, you get better players. You find players, convince them to stay. But it's not that I didn't expect this from him. I do. I expect the old guys to do the get off my lawn thing. When I'm his age, I'll probably rant about something that I wish but I'm trying to see this in the view of the players that have been screwed over for years and years and years. When their coach tells them, I'm not leaving, and then leaving as soon as they walk through the door. I've seen that happen way too many times. And kids who went, wait a minute, hold on. I went 500 miles outside of my state to play for you, and now you're leaving for more money? But the rules are I'm not allowed to leave without suffering something? Like, you can go right to your school and make money at your new school. You don't have to sit out a year, but I do. And you guys made the rules to benefit you. This is not a law. You just made it up. And now we're getting to transfer. We're getting the right to pursue our collegiate career the best we possibly can. And somebody like Dick Vitale hates it because he says mid-majors, who two of them went to the Final Four this year, they're getting screwed over.